lovely to be back here in Seattle and with the group, everyone here. I suppose as a Northern European, I'm most adapted to this type of weather, although it's nice to get up in the morning. It's relatively cool and to have the just be able to put on the lightest cottons and be ready to go for the day. And beautiful, the get up and the stars would be out overhead. Be headed up to Swami Muktananda's and he would give a reading every morning. And it's a lovely way to start the day. Then we would head over to the Bhajan Hall. We would open up the Bhajan Hall and half an hour of Ram Nam there and then off to tea. So many wonderful things, and whatever the weather is, the vibration there, the feeling, what Papa has built. You think of one man who just had the courage, had the tenacity, had the vision to go all the way to his complete God realization and what that has done for the world. I would like to read from Papa. Divine consciousness destroys the ego sense. To conquer the lower nature and reveal the glory of the divine as is the purpose of sadhana. The sadhaka, before he starts on this enterprise, is a mere tool in the hands of the ego, which dominates and controls him in every way. To destroy ego sense is not an easy task. A supreme endeavor backed up by divine grace is necessary. The mind has to be brought into subjection and all the desires vanquished. So the sadhaka's life is a life of tremendous struggle. The sadhaka should, in the first place, be fired with an intense aspiration for his spiritual regeneration and the attainment of the highest goal, God. Then contact of saints should follow. The ego, having its way on him, refuses to yield and sets up all kinds of obstacles on his path. It often poses as the Supreme himself and leads him astray. It often poses as the Supreme himself and leads him astray. At the beginning, the sadhaka finds it hard to distinguish the divine guidance from the promptings of the mere mind. The method by adopting which he can safely progress on the divine path is to surrender himself entirely to the all-powerful God within him by constantly thinking of him and his attributes. It is by constant remembrance of him alone that he develops the needed soul force to put down the mind and its machinations and rise superior to it. Instead of being the slave of the mind, he should be the master of it. As the sadhaka gets more and more into communion with the divine, the power of the ego diminishes until the ego itself disappears, when the full blaze of God realization floods his being. It must not be forgotten that the sadhaka to realize God is to assert his own immortal and divine self. Just as light dispels darkness, so the divine consciousness destroys the ego sense. The mind stuff, which was all along the cause of the ignorance and the resultant chaos, should totally cease to exist. It is now that God's mastery in the human vehicle is evident in all its sublimity. Such a sadhaka has become one with the supreme reality, and his external life becomes a spontaneous outflow of divine energy, radiance, and joy. He becomes the very embodiment of divine love. The struggle has now ended and victory achieved, a victory over all that is undivine in him, a victory that brings him a state of perfect freedom and bliss. Whenever violent passions seek to subdue the sadhaka and cause a sense of frustration and despair in him, he should sit in prayer in a prayerful attitude, calm and silent, and take complete refuge in God to escape the blast. Detachment from the mind and constant watchfulness over it is the way to gain control over it. Detachment can be possible only when the heart is attuned with the eternal self. Heroic spirit and readiness to endure pain and grit to face the failures and defeats, have full confidence in the ultimate success of his quest, should be the qualities of a true sadhaka. He should cling to God with all of his strength and with all of his heart and with all of his soul. In fact, the sadhaka's triumph is God's own triumph. The question is then asked, why God at one stroke does not lift the sadhaka to the realm of spiritual freedom and peace? He is, as an ignorant human being, is a delicate and weak instrument. Before the fullness of divine illumination can be revealed into it, it has to be, by the steady process, strengthened and made fit in all respects for the great consummation. God's power works in the sadhaka who has resigned himself to him for a gradual divinization. Divinization. That's not correct, but I'll go along with it. Of every part of his being, the antagonistic influences are now replaced by the suzerainty of all-controlling power of God. In short, God alone rules supreme in him and absorbs him in his resplendent being. Now the sadhaka and God are one, and the aim of human life is fulfilled. That is from Divine Life. And reading from Mother, Your Portable Paradise. Therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea? During my own experience, and I can speak only for myself, there was a tremendous earthquake within myself, and I saw the vision of this earthquake. The whole earth was upturned, and after it had been quieted down, I went searching everywhere for the people that I knew and loved. And amazingly, I found them, and that was wonderful. And I heard and saw the airplanes in the air, and I heard some of them crashing. Some were small and some were large. After this experience, it was such a tremendous experience, I asked Papa about this. I asked him if this would happen. I think I've told you this before. On a universal scale or on an individual scale? And he said, both. And we are in the midst of it now. It's happening. And it has happened even this last week with the 7.2 earthquake in California, the vibrations of which extended clear up to Salem. We are in the midst of it. 22 years ago, I saw that in vision when I was going through this tremendous spiritual sadhana. Mother says, therefore, we will not fear. Fear is such a tremendous thing in our life. It rules us, really, when we are in ego sense. We are tossed between two opposites, fear and desire nature, and they constantly keep us engaged. Either we want something and we're trying to achieve it, or we're afraid something else will happen and we're trying to avoid it with everything that we have. This is the ego nature itself. At some point in our existence, we get tired of this game. We no longer want to be involved in this desire, fear nature that goes along with the ego nature. We have to, in the beginning, really ascertain what is our true nature. It is a calling. It is something that goes deeper than what we know. I remember when, as a late teen, this calling started in earnest on me. And I was dissatisfied with the world. I didn't see anything in this world that I wanted. And I used to get up at night and I'd go for long walks. And it'd be midnight and 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be out walking. And sometimes it didn't exactly get me into trouble, but the police would see me out walking and wonder what I was doing, and so they would pull over, and we would go through a little question and answer period. And I didn't know what was disturbing me. I didn't know what it was that I was even yearning for. I just knew that I had a restlessness of the soul. and it wouldn't leave me alone. I considered it a curse at the time. And so it went on and on, day after day. And I wanted to know what it was that would satisfy me, what would begin to change in me that would make life worth living, for indeed, I didn't feel that life was even worth living in the way that I was. And gradually, it seemed far too gradual to me at the time, I can assure you, God began to show me what was possible within me. At first, it came through certain books that I was exposed to. And I learned about the Eastern way of thinking about things. I learned about reincarnation. I remember one time in high school that I heard about reincarnation and that we all came back as cows. That didn't seem very appealing to me, and it didn't make very much sense to me in addition. But when I read a reasonable description of what reincarnation was, the first thought I had, well, of course that's how it is. It seemed absolutely familiar to me. It seemed absolutely true to me. I didn't have any experience in it. I didn't know any of my own previous lifetimes. But as just a form of logic, why does this world proceed in the way that it does? Why does some seem to have it all from the beginning or many great attributes? How can a genius be born with a knowledge of how to play a piano or how to sing or how to do mathematics in an astounding way, in a way that most of us will never achieve? And how can somebody else be born with such disabilities, not a proper amount of intelligence even to make their way through the world? It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem that there's any real explanation for it, particularly if you're looking at a spiritual explanation. How is that balanced? How is that fair? And it's not. It's not. Until and unless you begin to see that there's a reason why things happen in the way they do. And so I accepted it at first in the beginning, just as an idea, just as something, an apprehension within myself. You might call it the John the Baptist. It is an intuition, it's a feeling, a hunch, that this is the correct thing. But then gradually, as God began to unfold within my own soul, I began to have the experiences that convinced me down to the core of my being that this was the truth of it. He showed me different previous lives. I didn't go looking after them. It wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to investigate. But one day I saw myself as this Russian that was living at that time, what would have been Russia. I was living in a village and a village head, and all the attributes of that lifetime came to me. And I knew where many of the things that I had, both as strengths and a few of them as weaknesses, came from that lifetime. And so I've had that connection with Russia on a number of different lifetimes. It's an interesting thing. And why that? Why not England? Well, I've also had some times in England because that's primarily where most of my heritage comes from. And at that time, I saw myself and I was in a position where I was trying to claim some ascendancy towards provincial power. And in the midst of that, I was struck down by a sword that hit me right in the spine, and it severed my spine. And I lived, but I was without the use of my legs for the rest, or anything else below my waist, for the rest of that lifetime. And it was a tremendously difficult lifetime that it brought to me. And that, too, fed into who I was in this lifetime. There was a very definite cause and effect factor through these visions that were granted to me. And it helped to explain why I struggled with some of the things that I struggled with and why I had some of the strengths. Sometimes we think of karma, and we think of it only in its negative aspect. But karma is also the positive. It's the strengths you bring with you. It's the attributes. It's all of the things that that make up who you are today in a human sense. But of course, as we know, we are more than just a human being. If we had to just try to perfect this human self down through time, we would never be able to do it. It would be the blind leading the blind. How would we know? And yet this spark of perfection exists within us. And as Papa talks about here, it is God himself who begins to call to us. And so it is through these experiences that we gradually come into a state of knowledge, not just something that we believe, but something that we actually experience. And when we experience it, it goes to the very core of our being. It goes into the very cells of our being. That's how we know that it is a true experience. There are many people who have ideas about how things should be, but these are untested ideas. One time I was talking to Swami Satchidananda, and he was telling me about a Westerner who had come there and written many books on physical perfection. And if you think yourself perfect, then you become perfect. And so then he asked why he was at the ashram. He didn't talk about it in that way. He says, when I come to India, I can't talk about it that way, because immediately they asked me about Ramana Maharshi, who had many disabilities physically and was of poor health through his many years of living. And so he didn't have an answer. So Swami Satchidananda summed it up all with untested theories. So we get ideas about how life should be. And there's certainly a truth to the fact that if we think positively, if we think, and particularly if we tap into God's higher mind, that we can be cured of many illnesses and diseases, that we can help to perfect this body. But that physical perfection as a natural outcome of realization just doesn't stand up to the test. Because we see where many of the great saints have had many physical disabilities all the way through. And it's not because they had mental disabilities to start with. In some cases, they are still facing their own karma. And in other cases, they are taking on the karma of others who are around them in order to help alleviate them. But we should begin to recognize that this divine source is within us and is seeking to express itself through us. I would like to read to you from the Gospel of Ramakrishna, which is a wonderful book. And then Master, speaking of Ramakrishna, talking to Surendra's brother, "You are a judge. That is very good. But remember, everything happens through God's power. It is He who has given you your high position. That is how you became a judge. People think it is they who are great. The water from the roof flows through a spout that is shaped like a lion's head. It looks as if the lion were bringing forth the water out from its own mouth. But look at the source of the water. A cloud gathers in the sky and rain falls on the roof. And then the water flows through the pipe and at last comes out through the spout." Look at how beautifully he draws this out, that this lion's mouth, from all appearances from down below, looks like that it's the source of the water. But the source of the water comes from a much higher place. And when we begin to attune ourselves to that, then everything comes into line. Then Surendra's brother, "The Brahmo Samaj preaches that the freedom of women and the abolition of the caste system. What do you think of these matters?" And the master responds, "Men feel that way when they are just beginning to develop spiritual yearning. A storm raises clouds of dust, and one cannot distinguish between the different trees, the mango, the hog plum, and the tamarind. But after the storm blows over, one sees clearly. After the first storm of divine passion is quelled, one gradually understands that God alone is the highest good, the eternal substance, and that all else is transitory. One cannot grasp this without tapasya, spiritual effort, you might say, and the company of holy men. What is the use of merely reciting the written parts for the drum? It is very difficult to put them into practice on the instrument. What can be accomplished by a mere lecture? It is austerity that is necessary. By that alone, one can comprehend. You ask about caste distinctions. There is only one way to remove them, and that is by love of God. Lovers of God have no caste. Through this divine love, the untouchable becomes pure. The pariah no longer remains a pariah. Chaitanya embraced all, including the pariahs. The members of the Brahma Samaj sing the name of Hari. That is very good. Through earnest prayer, one receives the grace of God and realizes Him. God can be realized by means of all paths. The same God is invoked by different names. Surrender's brother, sir, what do you think of theosophy? Master, I've heard that man can acquire superhuman powers through it and perform miracles. I saw a man who had brought a ghost under control. The ghost used to procure various things for his master. What shall I do with superhuman powers? Can one realize God through them? It is God. If God is not realized, then everything becomes false. When I read this, I wondered if that was the same individual that Sri Yukteswar had talked about, that he had met, who brought the ghost under control. What is the use of superhuman powers if God still eludes you? This is a great temptation that comes to us, and it is something that we have to be very vigilant about. There was a time when I felt different powers manifesting in me. There are some things that I said that became true, other things that I asked for that began to manifest, and I felt this power behind these so-called miracles. I also felt the seductive nature of these powers coming to me. And I realized through Mother's teachings, through Krishna's teachings, and all of the different pure saints that we know of, that these powers are to be eschewed. And if you do not, that you can be taken up into those powers and taken away, further away from God, not closer to Him. Sometimes we imagine having supernormal powers as proof of God realization, but that's not the case. There are many who are involved in the ego sense, who are manifesting these kinds of superhuman powers, and yet they lack the realization. Mother met an individual who's considered a great saint in India by many. And when she met him, he was demonstrating these various powers, and she saw into his nature. And she saw that he was very attached to them, and that these things were dominating his life now. Powers such as these can become the central focus rather than God. You know, this is a very difficult path. In the Vedas, it is called the razor's edge. And we must apply ourselves with everything that we have. As Papa said, we have to put everything of this world aside. Now, this does not mean that you have to leave everything behind and go out wandering in a life as Papa did for so many years. Rather, it is inwardly. You renounce everything. When you sit down on your meditation blanket, this is a time to put aside all worldly things. If worldly things are finding their way into your mind and carrying you off into daydreams, and suddenly the time has all passed and you've done nothing but think about the things of this world, you have not meditated on God at all. You have completely wasted the time spiritually. So this is something that we must learn, to bring the mind into abeyance. It is only through this that we will be able to realize the greater nature of God within us. We cannot just wait for God to do it for us. It is true that it is God's grace that is awakening us, but we must bend ourselves in effort in order to realize this highest nature. Sometimes, and particularly when we are long-term sadhakas. We can get into a kind of complacency. Life is not terrible, and we experience some God within our nature, but not enough. We don't dig deeper. We don't soar higher. And this is a great problem. It's a kind of a complacency. And everything in the spiritual sense is either going further toward God or going away from God. There's no real neutrality. And so if we're just biding our time, if we're not really going deeper and finding greater realization within ourselves, then there is something wrong in our own spiritual path. We have a number of devotees who are at Anandashram now, and one of the things I had recommended was that they take time for silent meditation in Swami Satchidananda's room. It's a powerful place, I can tell you. And so they have gone to meditating 4 hours a day, sitting with Swami Satchidananda, where his bed used to be. They have a bed there now, and his picture is on it, and you can go and sit. They have a few chairs, or you can sit on the straw mats on the floor. But to go in and get the full advantage of what God has brought into being through his spiritual masters, through his saints, is a tremendous thing to do. When we were in India, we went to Lari Mahasha's Samadhi temple there in Haridwar. And thinking that we would have some time with the disciples there, and God had something very different in mind. And as we were there, we became more and more swept up in Anandamaya Ma. I had felt Ma's presence before. We had been up into one of the hill stations where she has an ashram there in Almora. And there's a room there where she spent, and normally they keep it locked, but they will unlock it for you, and you can go in and meditate there. And my goodness, I never wanted to leave that room. It was tremendous, the feeling of power there. And so we've had some experiences with her, but as we came to Konkol and her Samadhi temple there, it is as if she swept us up in her presence. And she took us from one place to another, and mostly right there at her temple. And we felt such a tremendous presence in her, such a tremendous guidance. What a tremendous spiritual power she is. Now you may ask, should we remain focused on spiritual personalities? Shouldn't we go beyond that? And the truth is, yes, we must go beyond all spiritual personalities. But as Papa tells us, and as Mother tells us, God is both with form and without form. And once having transcended the form, you are safe to enjoy God as he manifests through form. And both the formless and the form embody God equally. And you can find God manifesting in these great forms, who are these great spiritual masters, these great saints, who have deigned to come and reveal themselves to us. And so we should not become so focused upon a spiritual personality that it becomes exclusive. This is, I'm afraid, something that's happened for many who follow after Master. There's a great emphasis put within the SRF organization that Master is the only way. Now, you have to be able to focus upon your own guru and your own spiritual path. If you're too much of a gladfly, if you're too much here and there and bouncing all over the place, you will not make the spiritual progress. However, we should not become exclusive. One of the things that Papa taught, and Mataji also emphasized, in Mataji saying that you shouldn't become a cult. And by that, she is speaking to people there at the ashram. They shouldn't become so exclusive that they don't allow anything else in. And so when we first arrived at the ashram, there are two groups there. There was one group that was chanting Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, and they were doing it for 7 days straight, 24 hours a day. And there was another group there from Meher Baba. And they were also chanting. They were going, I believe it was for 72 hours straight. And so this is really almost unheard of in any place, east or west, where these groups are allowed to come in. They're not demanded to conform to anything about the ashram or papa or anything else. They are given open sway to their own spiritual practice. But when you think about it, that these groups come and they chant God's name, and they infuse even more of God into that spiritual powerhouse that is Anandas Ashram, then it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. They're not threatened by anyone else. Anantharaman was telling me when I was there, and he reminded me back in 1999 that I had asked about the cover that was on the Gita Sandesh, Papa's commentary upon the Bhagavad Gita. And I remembered, and he said, at the time, I had asked about where that picture came from, because there's these five fantastic white horses that were pulling Arjuna and Krishna. And he looked a little embarrassed when he said it, and he says, well, we took it off of this calendar. And so he showed me the calendar, and it's a Yogada Satsang calendar. It's something from SRF. Well, he was telling me this last time, just a few weeks afterwards, they received a call. And in very curt, almost discourteous kind of language, they were told to cease and desist from publishing this way. And they agreed. They would have agreed anyway if they were just asked. But they were threatened with lawsuit and so forth. And such a heavy hand. Why the discourtesy? Why the heavy hand? Where is the love? Where is the joy? Without exception, everyone who talks about meeting Master, whether they became disciples or not, was the tremendous love that they felt from him. Unfortunately, in my own dealings with many of the SRF people, I have not felt that. It's been from anywhere from cool to cold, and that's whether they knew whether I was connected with Mother or not. Now, there have been some exceptions. There was a nun that when I was down there in the mid-1970s, and I felt a tremendous power of God from her, and she was very kind, very sweet towards me. I had come into Mount Washington early. The gate was cracked open, and so I took that as permission to come in, even though I was there earlier than what the time said. And I went, and I sat down on a bench out in front, and she came out and was very sweet and was just asking after me. And then she came out a little while later and told me they were going to have a fire drill and not to be alarmed and just to sit where I was. It was all right. And there's a Brahmachari that we met when we were up at Dwarahut. And I can tell you, he was a real light, filled with joy. And that we were connected with another aspect of Master's work didn't bother him one iota. He said, why not? Why not? And indeed, why not? If you go to India, who out of Lari Mahasya's disciples would say that only Sri Yukteswar had the truth and nobody else? Or Ram Kapal Mazumdar, why, he's the only one. And so on and so forth. No, they're all equally respected as great disciples of the Master. So why is there this fetish with that there is only one way? I've never seen anything produced in writing or even any direct quotes from the Master or Rajasi, for that matter, that lent any credence to this idea that SRF was the only way, that there could be no other teachers, and etc., and that there is no gurus after Master. I've now seen no evidence of that whatsoever. And so to open ourselves, I think one of the great things that happened for Mother in being excommunicated by SRF is that I think it would have been in her nature anyway, but that it universalized her vision. She saw it was God experience that was essential, not which group you belong to, not that you were either in nor that you were out, but that everyone belongs, and that you can find individuals within any church, mosque, any religion, who are lit up with the light of God. You will also find those who are in ignorance and who are far off the mark. And I am sure this is true in SRF as well. There are many, many wonderful souls. Of that I have no doubt. But there needs to be a universal vision that God experiences what is essential. And that will be essential throughout all time, no matter who you choose to follow in your journey towards God. It was Lari Mahasaya's son who wrote that beautiful text that is quoted in the Autobiography of a Yogi. And in it he says, destroy all the works on mathematics. Destroy them all. And the mathematically minded will always find the same principles. Now, their numbering system may be different. It may take them a very long time to get back to where mathematics is today. But it is true, because mathematics are true, universally true. Why would we think anything differently about God? God, even more than mathematics, is universally true. God experience is universally true. And whether God is called by that name, God, or by Ram, or by Allah, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. What is essential to the matter is the God experience, is the transformation that goes on within you. We have got to let go of these narrow definitions. Now, as I said earlier, when we begin to adhere to a spiritual path, we keep to that path. Swami Satchidananda talked about all the different kinds of tunes of singing Ram Nam. But he said that as you close in on the goal and you rise up higher, you just choose one tune, because that begins to regulate your breathing. I'd never thought about it that way before, but it's true. It begins to regulate your breathing. You go deeper and deeper with it. It has a profound effect upon you. And so whether you choose Papa's tune or some other tune, just try it. Just go deeper with it. Feel the vibration first as you chant it out loud. Feel it in your own chest. And then feel that peace, feel that experience that you're having through the vibration of the chant itself, whether you're chanting out loud or not. As you mentally chant, allow it to go in further and further. Now the mind begins to quiet down. You begin to feel the peace, the upliftment, the joy. Now you experience all of these things and your mind becomes consumed with them. And you want more of that because it represents absolute spiritual freedom within you. There's nothing else that matters to you then, because nothing in this world can compare to the Amrita, to the nectar, to the bliss of that God experience. And then gradually, gradually, you are lifted up into his everlasting realm of light, of love, of ever-new joy. It was Sri Yukteswar himself who defined God realization as ever-new joy. After Master had accomplished going into Samadhi, he went to Sri Yukteswar with a problem. And he said, Master, I don't think I've discovered God. And Sri Yukteswar peered into the core of the problem and he says, ah, I see. You're expecting to have great powers when you realize God. And now that you don't notice any particular great powers that have come to you, you don't think that you know God. But God is to be measured only in this, the ever-new joy that erupts within your own soul. And the guidance that you get, even in small, everyday kinds of things, that comes to you clearly from a higher source, a pure source. And through that, you are in God experience, and you do know God. And for a devotee such as you, as he spoke to Yogananda, this will be everything for you. So let us not become waylaid along the way. Let us seek to dive deeper. If you feel that you are somehow stuck in your spiritual journey, don't rest easy with that. It is just simply something that has come along that is forcing you to go deeper with God, to draw more deeply from Him. When we come up against an obstacle, all too often, we feel and we revert back to our ego awareness, and we feel that we are just one lone individual up against so many things that are at odds with us coming to our realization of God. But if we could but know it, in that moment, when we feel that we are making no progress, when we feel that everything is stacked up against us, in that moment, you turn your mind to God and you feel Him operating through you, that He is the power of overcoming that is deep within you. And you attune yourself to that power. You give yourself over to that divine life. Then you grow spiritually. And God will see to it. God will see to it that you will overcome that obstacle. And the greater the obstacle, oftentimes, the closer you are to the goal. The closer you are to the goal. So instead of becoming discouraged, instead of turning away from God, instead of crying defeat, because in a human sense you can't overcome what you're facing, you put your full and complete reliance upon God. You turn to Him even more powerfully, even more strongly. And then you watch what He does as He guides you through whatever it is that you're having to get through. And it's not to say that it is easy to happen. One of the devotees who's at the ashram now has had a terrifically difficult time while there. And some of you know what that's all about. Others go there and they just experience the bliss of the ashram. Others are there and it's like a crucifixion to be there. And you think, well, why should it be a crucifixion? But ask Mother. She went through it. And it's because that God has taken you there and He's putting you on the threshing floor. And that you will be threshed, you will be pounded. You will be made ready to be eaten by God. But as you surrender yourself to that process, it's not easy, it's not fun, it's not joyful in that sense. But it is producing a tremendous thing in you. Now, sometimes we get afraid, and as a result of being afraid, we put up the barriers, we put on the brakes. And we don't want to go any further because it was painful. But this is the wrong lesson to learn. The real lesson is, what did I do in the past that produced this kind of pain? And I don't want to keep on doing those things that produces this kind of pain. I want to align myself completely and totally with God. That is the lesson to learn. Not that the spiritual path is painful and difficult. That's not the spiritual path per se. God is not difficult. God is not painful. It is what we have done in our outward journey from God. That is what has produced the pain, the difficulty. And the lesson to learn from it isn't to stay away from God, but rather it's to go closer to God and resolve the problem, which was caused by separation from God. You see how logic can enter in there and lead us astray when we think, oh, it's too difficult, it's too hard. What's too difficult and too hard is living in separation from God. And whatever it is that we have to go through in order to achieve our oneness with God, it counts as little against what we receive as a result. So let us seek out that presence with certainty, with clarity, with tenacity, never giving up, always turning towards God, opening ourselves to God more and more and more. Now, the individual who is having such a difficult time, I just received word from her. And I had talked to her about not feeling a stranger to anybody. And the feeling that you are only meeting your loved ones there. And that the lotus of the heart will open. And she said she was beginning to get glimmers of that lotus opening. And she is getting to see what that meant. When this transformation happens in you, you will feel a kind of joy and bliss and love and light that is indescribable. But it will be something that you will treasure more than anything in this world. So let us be the mouth of the lion. And the water pours through us. The life energy, the force of God pours through us. But we know that it all comes from a higher source. And that it is perfect, it is beautiful. It is wonderful in God from beginning to end. You know, Mother said to live without fear. And think of the visions that she had, the earthquakes. Think of the airplanes running into buildings. Was that not a presage to what happened on 9/11? And I asked Mother one time when God had given me something, and it didn't happen for over a year, and then it did. And I said, would that really come from God? And she said, yes, it did. She says, there are many things that were given to me that had no time on it, but I knew that it was coming. And one of the things she saw were these great planes running into buildings, and then the huge cloud that came from that. But she said, be not afraid. Be not afraid. Go forward boldly. And God will justify you in your faith. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. To the light within you.